Hey everybody. Hey everybody, welcome to Flaherty's on Film. My name's Michael. Well, shit, I'm not gonna say that. Hit the music. This is Flaherty's on Films. I'm Michael.
And I'm Colleen.
And this week we're talking about Some Like a Hot from 1959.
Michael, do you want to tell the folks about
I sure do! When two male musicians witness a mob hit, they flee the state in an all-female band disguised as women. But stuff fucks up.
Did we tell the people what this podcast is about?
They know. Colleen, what do you think about
this
movie?
Maybe this is the first podcast to listen to, so you should know that we review the top...
Movies are like... All right, so imagine a picture, right?
A moving picture.
Yeah, it's an illusion of motion because of pictures.
But the AFI people, they're like, well, let's narrow it down to the top 100. And they have
we need to, like, overthink this. Like, just be entertained. Like, right. You have to put everything on a fucking list.
And they do, and yeah, we bought it. So.
We kind of sunk into that bullshit. So, anyway.
Michael, what'd you think of Some Like It Hot?
Fun. You know, it's a fun time. They're men dressed as women. What's that?
I know. My British friend David loves that shit.
We did just watch the movie Grapes of Wrath. Mm-hmm. So, like, after watching that, a downer of a time.
What a respite.
Yeah, it's just, like, fun to see, like, a nice, fun movie.
But at the same time, I was like, when I saw Grapes of Wrath, I'm like, oh, I get why this is on the AFI. When I saw Some Like It Hot, I'm like, oh, I guess this is a fun
You're scene. Like, I get why this is important, but I'm not going to watch this again. And then you watch Some Like It Hot, like, why would anyone watch it? But I'm going to watch this again. It's, like, fun.
It is fun, but it's, like, there's a lot of fun movies. Why? And this is high up on the... We're in the 20s. This is, like, one of the 20-something best movies of all time. I don't get that.
So funny. What was your what was the best joke? What was your favorite joke?
It's being sexually assaulted in an elevator.
Very funny. Now let's go to our first segment. Bam.
Time for Sam. You did not ask me what I thought of the movie.
Yep.
Technically, this movie is based on a French film that was so old, no one knows who wrote it, and the rough German remake of that French film.
Okay.
So Billy Wilder saw these films about male musicians dressing up as women and found inspiration.
Every time I think of America remake of a French film, I think of Les Cousins de
That's exactly.
That is an Arrest Development joke. Yep. Sorry.
In order to keep the men...
It preserves the French eroticism.
In order to keep the men in his story dressed as women... Wilder decided he needed to add another element to the tale. So while driving one day, he found inspiration in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. For those who don't know, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, it was a 7 members of Chicago's Northside Gang were gunned down by an order from Al Capone.
So I liked how artfully they changed in the film to the south side of Chicago, so it was different.
Well, that could be anything.
Right.
Yes.
I have a fun Al Capone fact. Do you want to hear it?
No, I want Sam to talk.
Okay. Well, I want to hear it.
Michael and my great-grandfather helped run Rome with Al Capone's gang through St. Paul.
It explains a lot about us.
Yeah. Man, I hope that's true.
So Wilder would later say that we needed to find the hammer lock of the story, the Iron Clan thing in which these two guys trapped in women's clothing could not just take off their wigs and say, I'm a guy. And the idea of bringing in the mob was the most important invention that made everything else possible.
Did you say hammer lock?
Hammer lock.
What's that?
Never heard that before. Wait. I mean, we can kind of guess what it means through context, but...
A lock that's a hammer?
Like, when you're like, oh, you're a dangerous guy, so we better get this hammer away from you. So you put it in your hammer lock.
Oh, I call it my hammer safe.
No, it's more like a bike lock, so you can't use the hammer, right?
I would use my hammer lock on my hammer safe.
When trying to cast this movie, a lot of names were thrown around, including Frank Sinatra. Billy Wilder even scheduled a lunch meeting with Sinatra to offer him the part. Wilder waited for Sinatra, but he never showed.
I feel like Sinatra would be too much of a, like, man's man about it. Like, yeah. He's not comfortable with his masculinity enough.
Yeah, there was a word that he used to describe him, which was cranky.
Right. Also, this movie is not very nice to Italians.
So John Lemon and Tony Curtis were cast. Billy Wilder had worked with Marilyn Monroe in 7 Year Itch and wasn't exceptionally thrilled with working with her again. However, when Monroe told the studio she was interested in the part, they immediately hired her. Wilder would later say, "I knew that I was going to go crazy at moments, and there were such moments, half a dozen moments, but you always tell yourself, I'm not married to her, right? And then you go home, you have no dinner, you take a sleeping pill, and you wake up in the morning and do it again."
That's weird.
Hmm.
Monroe would prove to be difficult on the set, often showing up late, refusing to leave her dressing room, and not knowing her lines. It would take her over 80 takes to get the lines, "Where's the bourbon?" and "It's me, sugar."
It's me, sugar.
Yeah, those are difficult to get.
I feel, but she was going through some stuff.
Here's my attempt. "It's me, sugar."
That was terrible. Do it again.
"It's me, sugar."
Mikey, we're going to need that 78 more times.
"It's me, sugar."
Oh, okay, never mind. That was perfect.
That was good. So three.
Yeah, apparently for the bourbon, she's going through drawers, and they actually, like, would tape the line in each drawer, because she kept... First, they taped it in one drawer, then she couldn't find it, and then...
Okay.
So...
I feel like it's always... I've heard a lot of butts of the joke that Marilyn Monroe's not a very good actor, but I thought she was fine in this film.
Because she was cast as a ditzy dummy.
Yeah, but, I mean, you still have to know how to deliver lines, like...
Well, at the 80th time.
I guess.
Yeah. That, yeah, was a lot of what I was reading, is it would take so long to get a good take out of her.
Well, maybe... Because she was having some issues.
I am not. This is just the facts that I'm saying.
I don't know why I'm such a Marilyn Monroe defender. I don't know her.
Oh, no, I feel really bad about my next part. Okay, well, after filming ended, Wilder was quoted as saying, "The question is whether Marilyn is a person at all or is one of the greatest DuPont products ever invented. She has breasts like granite, she defies gravity, and has a brain like Swiss cheese, full of holes. I have discussed this with my doctor and my psychiatrist, and they've told me I'm too old and too rich to go through this again." After hearing this quote, Monroe reportedly called Wilder and told him to go fuck himself.
Fair? Jesus Christ!
Years later, Wilder would say, "When it was all done and my stomach got back to normal, it seemed well worth the agony of working with her."
Oh, what a sacrifice. Jesus Christ.
He might not be the greatest.
I mean, that his attitudes about women become clear in the film.
Yes, I completely agree. So once the leads were cast and the pre-production started, Curtis and Lemon had to be turned into women. Per Lemon, "We were very cooperative about the makeup and heels, but we did put our feet down when we wanted better dresses. They wanted us to select off-the-rack stuff from the costume department. We said we wanted dresses done by Ori Kelly, who was doing Monroe's costumes." So...
I did think it was weird that they had such good stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
It was part of the plot that they had no money, and they had, like, dynamite dresses.
So they did go to the director and said, "We need to have the same costumer." So the costumer did all of their costumes, all of their dresses. And there's a story from the costumer that while measuring Marilyn, he commented, "You know, Marilyn, Tony Curtis has a better looking ass than you." And Monroe unbuttoned her blouse, opened it up, and said, "He doesn't have these tits, though."
Well, that's fun. I don't know.
Because I'm trying for a few.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Colleen, why are you fucking such a buzzkill?
I am. Just PC police ruining all our fun.
Yeah, Jesus.
Well, okay, this one was a little stickler for me because I watched this movie with Mikey and I commented how many times how much I hate the accent that Tony Curtis puts on.
Which is just like a really bad Cary Grant impression, right? Is that what it is?
I did not realize that. When working on his character, Junior, the heir to the Shell's oil fortune, Curtis went to Wilder and asked if he could do his Cary Grant impression.
Oh, really?
I did not get that at all.
I did not either.
Okay.
After demonstrating it, Wilder agreed. Cary Grant was invited to the showing of the film, and afterwards, Wilder asked if Grant appreciated Curtis's impression of him. Grant laughingly said, "I don't talk like that."
It wasn't because I've seen some Cary Grant movies. It's because I've seen other people do Cary Grant impressions, and that's how they do it. So, you know, like, what's-his-face in Sleepless in Seattle does it? Rob Reiner. Come on, Diane, look at these swatches. You know? Like, that's how people do a Cary Grant impression.
I guess. I don't know. I did not see it. I was just like, is he trying to do an accent? I'm confused.
Yeah.
But apparently.
Colleen got it.
Colleen got it.
Colleen got it. Colleen got it.
Yay, Colleen.
Point for Colleen.
So one of the preview audiences laughed so hard after Daphne announced her engagement to Osgood that they missed a lot of the following dialogue. So they had to reshoot the scene to put in pauses for laughter. And so to add the pauses, they gave the actor maracas.
Oh.
And so in that scene with the maracas.
I love that.
I know, that was my favorite scene.
That's a great fact.
Okay, so these facts are coming back. I like it. Okay. There is a line on the AFI quotes list. Coming in at number 48 is...
Nobody's perfect.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Well, nobody's perfect.
This line was not meant to stay in the film.
Oh, you guys who have not seen the movie, you're going to love the context of that quote.
It was literally a stand-in because they couldn't think of anything funnier. And they just had him say it, and they're like, we'll change it once we get going.
I'm going to say this. Sexist or homophobic as it may be, what a perfect ending to the film. I really liked it.
Yeah.
However, the preview audience loved it, and it stayed and became a classic line. This film was nominated for 6 Academy Awards. It won 1. It was nominated for Best Director, Best Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay.
Wait, which actor?
Jack Lemmon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually.
Yeah.
Best cinematography, best art direction, and the one that won was best costume design, black and white.
Oh, that's nice.
That's fun.
And my final fact for you guys today.
Do you say best costume design, black and white? They have different categories?
Yes.
This is another film that I kind of wish was in color, but...
Which is a fact that I told you guys before we were recording, that this... Actually, Marilyn Monroe had it in her contract that she only did color films. But she agreed to do black and white for this one specific case purely because the makeup they had to use to turn the men into women gave them the greenish tint. And that was actually an interesting story I did read. Apparently, they transformed them into the women, and literally, Billy Wilder just right away pushed them into a woman's restroom to see if they could pass.
That's gross.
Yeah, it's weird.
They both were like, it was the most uncomfortable moment of my life. It was really awkward, but no one paid any attention. So then they left.
Just, like, gone into public to test that?
Which is what Dustin Hoffman did in Tennessee.
Right.
So they came out, and they're like, well, it's a success. And one of them, I don't remember who, was kind of sitting there going, oh, maybe they just didn't comment on us because we were ugly women, and they didn't want to point it out. So they're like, let's try and get more glamorous. So they went back into the makeup department, and they had them do like this very glamorous look. And they went back into the bathroom, and right away they were called out as men. So they were like,
I mean, come on.
So.
Yeah.
Like, Dustin Hoffman had prosthetics on and looked like an old woman. Like, anyway, it doesn't matter. Sorry. Not important.
So my last act for you guys today, this film, was produced without approval from the motion picture's production code because it plays the ideas of homosexuality and cross-dressing, exactly. Pretty much everything they hate. Though the code was really strict, it was kind of in its decline due to, you know, society kind of becoming more comfortable with topics and films. However, this movie was crazy successful from the start, just a huge box office hit. And so the overwhelming success of Some Like It Hot is considered the final nail in the coffin for the Hays Code. So this is the film that kind of took away all of those.
Okay, that whole paragraph convinced me that maybe this belongs in the AFI. I still don't get why it's so high up, but it's like rousing success, it's staying in the culture, and it changing the way films are made. Okay, I get that. Still a little high on the list, but okay.
And Marilyn Monroe's tits.
Her tits. I should not... Like, my father-in-law listens to this. Anyway, that was...
Bam.
Time for Sam.
That was a great segment.
Oh, Sam is so smart.
Fuck, great. So now this is the next segment, and we're going to call this segment Trouble on the Amazon.
This is the part of the show where we do the one-star reviews from Amazon.com of the DVD.
We just came up with that title. So here's the first one. other than the three main characters, it's pretty dumb.
Okay.
I think including the three main characters, it's still pretty dumb.
But in a fun way.
Right, in a good way. Yeah, in a positive way.
This film is a 5-star classic. Okay. I remember watching it as a 10-year-old on Saturday afternoon theater, or the like, on TV, and it was a pleasure to see it without commercials for aluminum siding, and the transfer seems great to my eye. My objections with the special features. What? My objection is with the special features included. The interview with Tony Curtis contains off-color remarks that could have easily been left on the cutting room floor. I'm not a parent myself, but it seems a shame that a parent couldn't feel comfortable giving a tweener this DVD to watch and exposing the new monumental film instead of just more of the same old language and crap they could see every day on daytime TV. I guess the 10-year-olds are now producing the DVDs instead of watching them.
I wonder what he said.
Yeah.
Probably said.
Sounds interesting.
He probably said, fuck.
No.
No, shit. Maybe not.
Maybe now tweeners can't listen to our podcast.
In analyzing the plot of this movie, some things are immediately apparent. If men dressed as women are this popular, Janet Reno is a lock as Florida's next Mr. Miss Governor.
Wow, what a dated joke.
I don't get that at all.
Janet Reno was the 90s attorney general who looked a bit mannish.
I guess I'm just too young. Also, an individual of confused sexual identity who is bewitched by a near famous blonde? Shouldn't this be titled Anne H. Story?
Anne H. is the famous lesbian of the 90s. There's a lot of dated jokes.
Swimming in lost references. Finally, how could anyone come up with a more contrived plot? This movie should elicit continual shouts of, there is no way that would happen! The true movie viewer should require more.
I bet Jay here hates sitcoms.
Yeah, he does. He watches Will and Grace with anger.
He's like, what the?
That's, yeah, Jay
is. What is the likelihood of this?
That would never happen. Just say what you mean.
Like they would just run into Matt Lauer on the street.
It's just a misunderstanding.
Just have a conversation. I yell those things while also enjoying Will and Grace.
Yeah, Karen is so funny. So that was Trouble on the Amazon.
God damn it. You went too fast. I was going to do it with you. Too late. Too late.
Now it's time for our next segment. Favorite part, least favorite part.
Okay. I think my least favorite part is pretty obvious.
Oh, is it?
Is it?
Is it? What is it?
I just thought I guess the women's stuff was a bit, the sexist stuff. Probably. Because otherwise it's actually a pretty enjoyable film, and it's probably not that bad for the time period.
What was the most sexist part of the movie?
Oh, boy. I mean, Tony Curtis's attitude towards women was played for laughs a lot. Sexual harassment was played for laughs a lot.
Yeah, that was supposed to be pretty funny.
Right. It was weird. There was this one... We'll talk about that later. I guess that's my least favorite part. And also, like, Marilyn Monroe's character... wasn't great. I don't really get what her motivations were some of the time.
It's weird, yeah, because, like, so there are a lot of movies where a man is trying to trick a woman into being like, I'm this really successful guy. And then usually the second half of the movie is like, oh, you discovered my secret, but I'm going to prove to you that I'm good anyway. In this movie, when Marilyn finds out the secret, that doesn't really change anything. She's just like, I still love you.
Right. Well, that part of it is like comprised into a 2-second scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he's just like, oh, but I'm terrible, but I care about
it. I don't think of it as a real flaw because the movie doesn't have time for that.
Correct.
Yeah, so...
I guess I just don't have a ton of complaints about it. Even though it's not a great movie, I don't really have a lot of complaints, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What's your favorite part?
Honestly, you're going to disagree with me on this.
Oh, boy.
I thought it was kind of funny. Like, there were parts that made me laugh.
I don't disagree with you. I thought it was funny.
You're kind of a joke police.
That's true. That's very, very true.
The physical comedy was really good. And
what was the best bit?
I love the maracas bit.
That's a good bit.
It's so funny. That's a good Jack bit. Jack Lemmon's really funny.
Jack Lemmon is very interesting.
Tony Curtis is dashing.
He's hot.
You know what, though? So we saw him in Spartacus. Hot.
What was he in Spartacus?
The hot guy. He was the musician.
I know what he is in this movie, but I forget what he is in Spartacus. It's possible that I forget.
He had the gay undertones with the other guy.
Oh, okay. The musician. And okay.
So when I saw him, I'm like, oh, he's so pretty. I bet he's going to be an attractive woman. But he is a very manly woman.
Yeah. I actually had the same thought process.
But because it's a comedy movie, it didn't really bother me that
part. No, it doesn't really matter.
Like, none of the unlikelihoods bothered me because I'm like, this is the movie I'm watching.
Wait, is this your favorite part or least favorite part? What was your... Oh, your least favorite part was misogyny. Favorite part is it is funny.
Yeah. I thought... I'm surprised at how delighted I was by such an old movie.
I'll say, the movie is funny, but there are some scenes where I'm like, I don't get the joke here at all. There's the scene where Marilyn goes to the yacht for the first time, where Tony Curtis is pretending to be...
Oh, that's my least favorite part, actually.
Yeah, that's probably my least favorite scene, because Tony Curtis's plan is to just sleep with Marilyn. And his plan is to convince Marilyn that he has this problem where he just can't get aroused by any woman. Right. And he goes on this bit for such a long time.
And you're like, is this funny?
Is this funny? Is it even a good strategy? Hey.
I was like, I think I want to be offended by his lies, but I'm actually just so baffled by it. I'm not even offended.
She wants to sleep with you anyway. So right. You don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do this whole bit like, oh no, if any woman could possibly rouse me, I'll marry her on the spot. You could just say, I'm super rich, and you'll probably bang me anyway. Like, why are you doing this weird setup?
At any point when they're on that scene, and Marilyn's like, it's just us on that boat. Do you ever think of the Always Sunny bit?
The implication? I thought of that so much. All right, to explain, there's no way to explain this in a good way, but there's a really funny bit where he goes, we're going to take these women on the boat, and you know, they'll totally sleep with us because of the implication.
You've said that word implication a couple of times. What implication?
The implication that things might go wrong for her if she refuses to sleep with me. Now, not that things are going to go wrong for her, but she's thinking that they will.
But it sounds like she doesn't want to have sex.
Why aren't you understanding
this? There's no way to explain this. That doesn't sound horrible, but no. It's really funny.
It's very, very funny. Yeah, look it up. So my favorite part is...
Maybe
I just
cut that out.
No, it's in. My favorite part are the two main actors. I just thought when they got good chemistry together and they're just fun. Every time the two main guys are together just talking, it's a fun time.
Oh, I actually thought of my other least favorite part.
Yeah.
I actually thought, so Tony Curtis's character was worse to women off screen, but on screen, Jack Lemmon's character was way creepier.
Oh, very creepy.
Yeah, I forgot. I guess that's kind of rolled into the misogyny complaint, but he was gross.
Well, he was gross. He was creepy in a non-misogynistic way, I thought.
Also, the Joker, right?
Yeah. I told you this. When he puts on his makeup, and he's got a wig, and he's got a very bony, long face, and he does a very, very creepy laugh, he explodes into laughter. I just thought, you're so the Joker.
Why so serious?
Yeah, I actually thought of a couple of lines from The Dark Knight, but replaced with references to this movie. Would you like to hear them?
I would love it.
Why so Marilyn? That's one. And then do you want to hear another one?
I would love to.
Do you want to know how I got this sax? So those are my two lines from The Dark Knight.
Yeah,
the bow fiddle. All right.
Do you love how when he was being really good at the bow fiddle, he would spin it around a lot?
I loved that. Of course I loved it. Of course I love Marilyn having a ukulele that's like, why is that there? No one's hearing that.
That was really fun. I also, it doesn't come up in my summary, but a lot of times they keep threatening to kick Marilyn out of the troupe because of her drinking.
Yeah.
It's like, no fucking way you're going to kick her out. Like, she's obviously the main attraction.
People are coming to see her,
for sure.
She's
beautiful, and she also says how she doesn't sing, but I assume she's dubbed by another singer.
Isn't there? I thought she was a singer.
Is she? That's her? I thought she was a very good singer.
The only thing I know about her is her singing Happy Birthday.
Yeah, but like she does in this weird breathy way. Like she sang.
Then
like,
she did it in this movie.
She sang like a real singer.
In this movie?
I thought so.
No, dude.
Everyone disagrees with me, but I thought it was good.
Nah, dude. I disagree with you.
All right. Well, let's just get to the plot summary, okay. Shall we?
Yeah, we should. Am I reading the first?
Apparently? Go for it.
All right. The film opens with a gunfight. Replete with silly sound effects.
Which they totally had like a Star Wars laser gun sound effect to begin with. Pew, pew.
I have a question. What does replete mean?
Like rife with.
It's Chicago in 1929. Prohibition is in full swing. Our heroes, Jerry, played by Jack Lemmon, and Joe, played by Tony Curtis, the hot one, work as musicians in a speakeasy disguised as a funeral home. Jerry is the serious one, while Joe is the gambler and ladies' man. As in, he uses women constantly.
Right, for their money and sleeps with
them. And that's never... There's no character arcs in this movie. He doesn't, like, grow. That doesn't change.
He grows a little bit.
Not really.
Either way, I thought... So they set that up. So I never go back and edit, or our intern.
Yeah.
Never goes back and edits the first paragraph because they're like, oh, Jerry's like this serious one who's like, oh, we need to be careful. That character does not stick through the whole movie. That's just the first
part. He was just a more neurotic one.
Yeah, but he was like, oh, we have to be serious about this. We have to be careful with our money. We have to, like, we don't know how long we have this job.
Yeah, that doesn't really follow through.
That doesn't follow at all. So yeah. Him being the serious one and the other one being the gambler, recluse, doesn't stick.
No.
Don't keep that in mind.
It's not relevant.
Yeah. The speakeasy is raided by the police. Oh, no!
I love how you said, oh, no. I love how the intern wrote, oh, no.
Spats Columbo, that was his name. That's great. The fella who owns the place figures out that Toothpick Charlie ratted him out.
Cannot trust a man named Toothpick.
No. Joe and Jerry flee the cops, and Joe bets their overcoats in the cold Chicago winters, but they lose.
Because they're reckless with money.
Well, Joe is. Jerry's not, but again, doesn't follow.
But he's anyway, an enabler.
As they try and fail to get new jobs, we find out that Sweet Sue's all-female band is headed to Miami looking for a bass and saxophone player. Oh yeah, that's what they play.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
After the duo straight up witness Spats murder Toothpick Charlie, Spats tries to murder Joe and Jerry. That was a fun scene because there's like eight dudes all like, all right, we're going to murder you two guys. And then one of them turns around and that's enough for them to escape.
Yeah.
Do you remember the scene? It's just a little silly. I just noticed a little plot hole.
That's what Spats says.
You won't breathe nothing, not even air. That's very funny.
You won't breathe nothing, not even air.
The boys narrowly escape and need to get out of town fast. The obvious thing to do, of course, is to dress up as totally believable women and join Sweet Sue's band as Josephine and Daphne. That's a very fun moment where he's like, Why not Geraldine? Why do you have... It's like, because I just feel like Daphne.
I did like that.
Yeah.
I just... Guys, you guys have to Google this. They just are so unbelievable as women.
Like, yeah.
I mean, maybe we've seen like Tom Hanks in that show. Like, that's more believable as a woman. But anyway. We then meet Sugar Cane, Marilyn Monroe. By the way, she says she changed her name, but her first name was always Sugar. From Sandusky, Ohio.
That's a good first name, though. That's fun to have the character name that.
A ukulele player and singer who has an obnoxious, sexy, muted trumpet riff every time she's on screen. Jack makes friends with all the girls and is a total creep. He just, like, looks at them changing a lot. It's weird.
Yeah, that's not good.
But it's funny, I guess. He also covers for Sugar's drinking, which may be a legitimate problem. She drinks too much. Well, she actually has a line where she's like, I can stop anytime,
but I don't want to. I just don't want to now.
Mikey, your Marilyn is spot on. Jack throws a fun party in his bunk is what I meant to say. In his bunk, and it turns out Sugar has a real thing for saxophone players.
What a fun scene when Jack is like, okay, so I want Marilyn alone with me in my bunk. But then all the ladies are just like, we all love drinking. You get the maraschino cherries, or what are they called?
Yeah, they're the maraschino cherries and vermouth because they're making Manhattans. That was fun.
I was reading other people's like thoughts on this movie, and they're like, you know, that just be, you know, women are just like people. So it'd be just boring. Like, women are not these like weird, like, oh, we love to do things all the time.
I would totally love to make
Manhattans. Well, I do too. That's not the point.
But she's sworn off saxophone players forever. She's like just, they're catnip to her and she won't ever be with a saxophone player.
That's a fun part of Marilyn's character is that she does call herself dumb.
Yeah.
And that never really changes.
Nope.
That's like just a fun
and
part.
And she does dumb things also.
And she just falls for men.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fun.
She's going to Florida to land herself a rich man with glasses.
That's
important.
They arrive in Miami where Jack is sexually harassed by a weirdo mama's boy, Osgood Fielding. But it's okay, because he's funny. Very true.
Like, he gets pinched in the elevator, and he's like, I'm coming for you! Like,
What a situation ripe with comedy. Joe seems to show more empathy for women, but then decides to deceive Sugar by dressing up as a millionaire heir to Shell Oil with glasses, who may or may not have an English accent. Like a bad Cary Grant impression, as we learned, which is factual.
Usually when people find I do all yam, they get themselves a wheelchair, a shyster lawyer, and sue me for $750,000.
So when I say he shows some empathy, like, Jack Lemmon comes in. He's like, you won't believe it. I was pinched in the elevator. Men have been such jerks to me. I'm not even pretty. And then he says, you know, it doesn't matter if you're pretty. Men are terrible. This is how the other half lives. And I'm like, oh, wow. He's actually having empathy for women.
But I got to go. I got to go scheme for sex. Right. I'll BRB. When they first meet, he says he prefers classical music over jazz. Although, I suppose some like it hot.
That was a weird... It was just a weird scene to pull a movie title from, but whatever.
And I don't even... Why would you call the movie that, even though it's, they say it there?
I don't know. I can't explain it.
Some like it hot because they're hot.
For inexplicably, Joe convinces Jerry to keep Osgood busy. Like, I don't get why Jerry did that for him.
Right. He also questioned that. Like, why did he agree to go along with this deal?
So that Jack can take Sugar on Osgood's yacht and pass it off as his own. Jack convinces Sugar that he's left cold by women since his girlfriend at Princeton fell into the Grand Canyon. That is his story. He said if he could find a girl who could finally arouse him, he'd marry her like that.
That's just such a bad... That's the worst scene.
She gets to work somewhat successfully. I mean, it's very PG. Like, they just make out.
No, it's just, like, so long.
Yeah.
And you're just like, why is this so long? Like, I get what's going to happen. And it's not funny. Meanwhile, Jerry and Osgood are tangoing the night away. Jerry and Joe return to the hotel where we learn that Jerry is engaged to Osgood and he does maracas.
It's so funny. He's like, oh, we dance the night away. Cha-cha-cha.
Jack Lemmon. Yeah, his physical acting. I mean, it's like it's really...
so good.
I don't know if it's good. It's just so, like, punctual. It's just so just, like... in your face. It's so exaggerated and cartoonish.
Well, it's very engaging for this kind of movie.
Well, just like early in the movie when they're just normal people, you're like, why? He's doing like such a bit. Like he's doing too much.
So I remember thought. We saw him in The Apartment.
The Apartment, right.
I think this movie's a much better fit for him.
Yes.
Because he is cartoonish and exaggerated, but that's perfect for this movie. And The Apartment, he has to be a bit more
grounded. I didn't think it was perfect for the beginning of the movie. I'm just like, it's just so, it's too much.
Well,
I
need you to die. Tried to make him the grounded, serious character, and then later in the movie, they're like, no, forget that.
But he wasn't. But he didn't act grounded and serious in the beginning, right? Because he was just his like weird, like his emotions are just so like distinct and like exaggerated.
Well, so I'm glad they kind of got rid of that character trait.
Right. Yeah. For sure. Where'd we leave off?
Jerry. So he's engaged to Osgood.
Jerry explains Osgood. He's going to marry Osgood to get a settlement in alimony. Joe talks him out of it because marriage between two men is just not done.
Because there are laws and conventions.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Also, Osgood. That's funny.
Why?
Because that's a funny name.
Is that what?
You don't think it's funny?
You just like the name Osgood?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm right there with you.
Oh, this also comes up later that Osgood has been married many times, but some of his marriages broke up because his mama did not approve. Like, oh, the last one smoked and her mama didn't like that and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That comes up later. As a coincidence, a mob convention comes to the hotel.
What a coincidence.
It's called Friends of the Italian Opera. That was such a... I don't know. It shouldn't have made me laugh, but it did. There's a scene where they were checking guys for guns and there'd be like... There would be a gun that would fall in his pants. Well, it's not loaded. Then bullets fall on this other side of the pan. It was very funny.
It's quite cute.
It's very cute. The duo realize they have to leave. And Joe tells Sugar he's leaving for Venezuela to marry a different woman.
Whoa.
Oh, no. He gives her the diamond bracelet Jerry got from Osgood, which was so rude. That was not his diamond bracelet to give away.
Nope, not nice. No,
not but I guess it was supposed to be redeeming for his character. That the only thing they owned of value he gave to Marilyn. They attempt to escape, but they're chased around the hotel by mobsters in a very funny, like a very like a sitcom-y cute chase.
Physical scene. Comedy, yeah.
They hide away and witness yet another murder, this time of Spatz and his men. Of murderers popping out of a cake, which sure, okay.
loved it.
They hide away, oh, sorry. They get away and Joe watches Sugar sing about how she's through with love. He kisses Sugar, dressed as Josephine, and Sugar realized that Josephine and the millionaire are the same person.
Oh my god.
She figures it out.
Oh my gosh, she got it. And then, yeah, so they fall in love.
There's one more.
Jerry persuades Osgood to take them away on their yacht, saying they'll elope. Sugar runs to the boat, professing her love, even as she tries to talk her out of it, saying he's a liar and a cheat. Meanwhile, Jerry talks to Osgood out of getting married.
Tries to talk him out of getting married.
Saying she smokes, has loose morals, and can't have children. When that doesn't work, he professes he's a man. Osgood says, well, nobody's perfect. So they fall in love.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good.
That was nice.
Yeah. It's a nice movie. It's cute.
It is still, you know, of its time, as it were.
You know what else is cute?
What?
Our brother John.
Oh, so we should call him.
We should call him for this segment, Call the Prom Call.
Call John Flaherty.
Calling John Flaherty.
I feel like, yeah, you and I are not on like a Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis wavelength right now.
No, we're not.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
You think he's going to answer?
Hello.
John!
Hey, John. This is Flaherty's on Films. We're talking about the movie Some Like It Hot. Have you seen it?
I'm approximately 56 minutes through.
Oh,
but,
no.
But, hey, I wasn't enjoying it that much anyway, so that's all right.
That's fine.
We kind of liked it.
Do you want to just give us your overall thoughts?
Are they, like, trying to do a gag every time Marilyn Monroe shows up on screen? It just...
The musical riff? That? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because she's so hot.
And it's making me a bit uncomfortable.
She's real hot.
The first time. The fourth time, not so much.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't my kind of comedy, but, you know, it's 59, so.
Yeah.
It probably plays. Yeah. I'm not sad to not watch the second half.
But it gets fun.
Does it?
Yeah, it's fine.
I mean, it's the same route.
They've been on this freaking train for 30 minutes.
If you didn't like the beginning, you're not going to like the end.
Right.
Yeah, then I'm okay with that. I'm going to go ahead and give it a C-.
Perfect.
It's palatable, but I'm not enjoying it.
Perfect. Any closing thoughts?
Marilyn Monroe is attractive.
She's very pretty.
Agreed. We will talk to you next time. Thanks so much for your call.
Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I mean, we called you, I guess.
I did like how bitchy Marilyn Monroe was occasionally. Remember when she would say stuff like, oh, Josephine, I love how you're so flat-chested. Clothes just fit on you. Or, oh, poor Josephine, she doesn't have a bow.
Colleen, what grade would you give this movie?
I mean, for what it achieves and how much I enjoyed it,
yeah,
solid B.
All right, here's what I'm going to give the movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this movie a B because I think it is not the funniest movie I've ever seen, but it's like, it's cute.
I do wonder if I'm giving it a higher grade because the last movie I watched was Grapes of Wrath, and I just really needed an enjoyable movie.
No, because a lot of these movies that we watch are bummers, and it's always nice to see a movie that's this sort of uplifting and just nice.
I think I would have actually given a higher grade if... I guess Sam did talk me into a little more why it's on the AFI, but it's still crazy that it's one of the best, like, 26 movies of all time. Like, that's crazy.
Absolutely. Who are you sponsored by this week?
Peloton bicycles.
What's that?
It's like really, really overpriced exercise bikes.
So you can pay a lot and you get...
Pay so much money, but also you can take classes, I guess. So if you like have a really lovely penthouse overlooking the cityscape and you're
Which
like,
I have.
I need an exercise bike right here.
Yeah.
Peloton bicycles.
Peloton bike? And are they like fancy looking?
Oh, they're fancy.
So they're like really...
If I want a bike in the future,
it can
the future is now.
It can pull a room together.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, almost have no furniture in that extra room you have.
Sure, because it's got all point to the bike.
Of course.
Can you get in different colors?
No.
Just, what's color is it?
Just gray. But, like, gray. You know, like shiny, cool gray.
Shiny, cool gray. What color does the room have to be to complement the bike?
I assume it's all windows because it's your very lovely penthouse.
So it's a blank room.
Right. Brought together by the fancy Peloton bicycle.
And that was Flaherty's on Films. Join us next time when we talk about...
Who knows?
It's Chinatown!
Chinatown!
Chinatown! And...
Bye!